Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kerup, guten tag, ciao, viva, catbang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget Farm Masuda Kill, Vivisection Prison, Killitary Industrial Court Port Nation, in the cheese covered, post constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, food born in the NRA, USA. Home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Easter Sunday. I feel like I'm rising from the dead myself right now, or at least the dead or the coma of exhaustion from organizing the World Vegan Summit and Expo, where we attempted to raise animal advocacy from the dead. Seems like that's what animal advocates are selling us now, dead animals. Anyway, so, you know, the intent there was to actually celebrate life and to try to sustain living on this precious planet. And today, if you are celebrating Easter, well, the pseudo-animal advocacy movement led by the Humane Society of the United States, or HEGS, which is fully supported by groups such as Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, Farm Sanctuary, Farm USA, the so-called Animal Rights Conference, and, you know, the Wayne Pacellis of the world, the Paul Shapiros, Michael Gregors, and Bruce Friedrichs of the world. That cult of animal advocacy, with its religious leader, Pope Pacelli, would tell you, celebrate Easter today with a crate-free holiday ham, with your proper tithing, of course, to the HSUS Prince of Pig Killing himself, Vice President Joe Maxwell, who will have the blood of another 50,000 murder victims on his hands since last Easter. Yes, that's how many pigs die because of him. You can also celebrate Passover this year with a kosher Joe Maxwell HSUS holiday ham, too. You know, the story of Passover has been modernized, you know? I mean, every pig who survived to be killed for your holiday ham avoided a modern-day plague of a diarrhea-causing virus, not by you know, by splattering animal blood on the, you know, barn door so that this disease would pass over, but by eating diarrhea. Yes, that is true. Seriously. That's the way they build immunity to this disease so that they can live to be killed. Thou shalt not kill, seems to be interesting message for Easter, except when they taste good, or in the name of religion. Why is this day different from all other days? Well, today we eat kosher, humane, diarrhea-fed holiday ham. Why not? You know, like, go with the times. Just the kind of meal befitting a Jewish rabbi named Jesus, right? Huh? Not really, since Jesus probably didn't, well, he didn't have to waste time reading the sequel to the Bible yet to be written about him. So he probably read the original, you know, short version there with the Genesis 1:29 in it. This Jewish rabbi, you know, Genesis 1:29, which God says, "Behold, I have given you every plant-bearing seed and every tree with fruit, with seed in its fruit. This will be your food." So, the original Bible, right there, the one that Jesus would have read and maybe would have lived by, since it was written by God, meaning himself or his father or his son. So basically said, you know, be vegan. That's the beginning of the Bible there. The Pope, the actual Pope, said Jesus did not eat lamb at the Last Supper, probably because he was a vegan peace and animal advocate. Explained so much better on this radio program by historian Rin Berry than I would do. I again mourn the passing of Rin Berry, yet his historical wisdom rises even after his death, and I strongly suggest you go to goveganradio.com and search for the programs with Rin Berry. I usually had him on around Easter, and he will make much more sense of the religious phenomena and fable than I can, because I don't really understand any of it very well. You know, starting with that holiday ham, right, of a food that Jesus would not approve, and going from there. Apparently, someone was born to a virgin who was both his own son and or his own father. Okay. And let's see, who is the Prince of Peace whose life is celebrated, you know, I mean, by wars in his name, right? By killing others with church barbecues and you know, by eating crackers that are supposed to be his body and drinking wine, which is supposed to be his blood. Okay. And we also have children running around looking for painted ovarian secretions as part of the celebration. Those ovarian or what is the body part actually? The cloaca. Okay, yes, from the secretions from the cloaca of tortured, mutilated birds. And children are collecting little baby birds and bunny rabbits for Easter to be discarded in the trash in a few days as if they were Christmas toys, you know, all to celebrate a Prince of Peace, a Lamb of God, and yet lamb's blood was supposed to be smeared on your door so that the plague of the day would pass over your house. Seems to be a lot of contrived violence to celebrate peace, to celebrate that doctrine of thou shalt not kill and the spirit of Genesis 1:29, the spirit, the son, the father, the innocent animals of God's creation, pigs and chickens and lambs all suffering and dying to celebrate. I just don't get it. So, I mean, it almost seems, you know, like the work of the propagandists of the day, whether, you know, they're the ancients or the modern ones, you know, the ancient Wayne Pacellis, the ancient Joe Maxwells back then, those who would profit from creating niche markets, you know, like we have the humane meat industry of today. You know, back then, you get a craving for flesh and blood, but, you know, still have some Jewish guilt about Genesis 1:29, where God tells you to be vegan. So, then, the Wayne Pacelli of the day can introduce kosher meat. Okay, yes, okay. Now we have kosher meat, yes. And then another niche market we can for our Muslim brothers and sisters, halal. You know, all violations of the original Bible. I guess, you know, somebody breeding and raising chickens and rabbits for profit, you know, would say, well, let's create a holiday or let's get in with a holiday here where we can, you know, see the children and indoctrinate the little children into wanting chicken eggs, right? And that learning animals are just for our use, just for our entertainment. Look at the cute little baby chick, at the little bunny rabbit who, outlive their usefulness in just a few days, and can be thrown away like any other product or thing. Don't be sad, little Johnny. To make you feel better, let's go out for some chicken nuggets. Huh? And look, here's a special little gift for you, Johnny, to make you feel better. A rabbit's foot keychain. Okay, you feel better now? I know you don't like it that Whole Foods is selling rabbit meat. Let's go there and buy your favorite. Instead of rabbit meat, we can get lamb chops for dinner, huh? You know, animal welfare rated step 3, huh? We'll, you know, even take some of the juice from the lamb chops and smear it on the door. You know, maybe it'll protect us from a plague. Maybe Ebola. Huh? I don't know about that lamb's blood on the door. You would think a god of peace, or a prince of peace, or a thou shalt not kill kind of god, or a god who actually dictated Genesis 1:29, you know, that says we should be vegan. You would think a god like that would be perfectly happy with some, let's say, tomato sauce smeared on the door, right? Okay, this plague will pass you by. Just put some tomato sauce on the door. Or maybe some Manischewitz grape juice or something, huh? But those animal-exploiting profiteers always have such a knack for marketing, huh? Right? Kosher meat, blessed by a rabbi. That has the religious seal of approval on something forbidden. Thou shalt not kill, and you should be vegan. Just as humane ham, chickens, eggs, and lambs are blessed by high priests of death like Pacelli, Priest Runkle, and have the animal rights seal of approval on them. Again, you'll get a much better historical perspective on all of this by going to goveganradio.com and searching for guest Rin Berry. Told us that this was a fertility holiday, so all right, well, let's eat fertility foods now. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds. Okay, we'll talk to some of the people who attended the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up on the program. Also, Gary Francione next hour on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and there are also Bob Linden pages, 2 of them on Facebook, to keep us all confused and duplicating our efforts and everything. And here we are on Easter Sunday. I was suggesting that you do go to goveganradio.com, check the archives, and listen to the programs with historian Rin Berry. He was often on during holiday times to explain what was going on. He did say that Jesus would have been, had to be, a vegan animal rights activist. And Rin was able to translate all the ancient texts, so he would know. So check that out. And he did tell us that Easter is, it's a holiday of basically fertility. It's that's why the bunnies and the eggs and all. But instead of the traditional celebration of fertility with death, like you expect life to come from death, right? Like by eating a ham or chicken or eggs. I will celebrate fertility with true fertility foods. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, grains, seeds, beans, like the Bible said that we're supposed to eat in Genesis book 1, verse 29, just in case nobody's reading, everybody's skipping ahead to see what happens. But, you know, I mean, I just say, look at an apple seed. How fertile, right? You know, an apple seed, just, you know, with generations of apples in it, like for forever, that one apple seed. You know, how it has the power to outlast, you know, our rusting battleships or nuclear plants or drones. And I don't know, oddly, people mistakenly expect life to rise from the dead. You expect life to come from eating a pig's dead body, chicken, lamb, really? You know, that wrongful hunger, that diet of death is actually, it's quickly making our planet infertile. And I think we are about to be dried up and spent. And, you know, that's California leads the way. And we're having severe water problems. I'll discuss that in a few minutes here on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lynn. Why do we have to solve all the world's problems? Why is it left to the vegans to do this? I don't know. We are grateful for the opportunity to at least let people know. And we thank the people who make this radio program possible. Thank the people who made the World Vegan Summit and Expo possible. So some words of truth can get out there about how we do save the planet from climate change and California from water shortage. I do suggest that you go to chompingclimatechange.org. I find that to be one of the more credible resources regarding climate change. Chompingclimatechange.org. That seems to rely on the good work of World Bank, World Watch Institute climate specialists, who tell us that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, producing at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. And then if you look at chompingclimatechange.org now, it says, look at the headline, down with less meat, up with happy, better vegan foods. So some of us know what the answer is now. We just got to get the word around, you know, but please, a little help, Governor Brown, a little help, environmental groups, a little help, media, unlikely. So anyway, but there you see it at Chomping Climate Change. Down with less meat, up with happy, better vegan foods. Again, we have been misled by a meat influenced, a rancher advocacy animal rights movement that sells us on the concept of less meat and meatless Mondays. And that less meat is not the answer. We need to go, you know, like no meat, like vegan, like no meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. Okay. Well, we'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Again, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio. And be my friend, like me on Facebook, please, at Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. And, well, we vegans have our work cut out for us. Not only do we have to save the planet from climate change, but apparently we have to save California from drought now, and we are the only solution. So Now, it's no sacrifice. It's actually, you know, the way to go. You're going to be happy about going vegan to save the planet and to save California. If you don't believe me, just look at the menu at Vegetarian House Restaurant in San Jose. Okay, that's all I'm asking you to do, is stop eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs to save the planet and to save California. And look at the kind of food that you will be enjoying, you know, with your action, with your positive action. Vegetarian House is a 100% vegan restaurant, a non-GMO. It's really fantastic. You'll love it. It's one of the best restaurants in the world. 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose, vegetarianhouse.us. If you're in the Bay Area, Vegetarian House caters, whether it's a business event, a social event, if you're getting married, you can have great food that will save California from drought and the planet from climate change just by contacting Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us. This past week, Governor Brown said it, and in a release, it says, Governor Brown directs the first ever statewide mandatory water reduction. So here we go. And this is dated April 1st, 2015. And, you know, actually, the solutions presented by Gov Enronment and environmental groups and the media all do seem like April Fool's jokes. But what do you expect from a fracking politician? I said fracking. That's right. A pro-fracking California liberal Democrat governor, Jerry Brown. What a wonderful system our one-party, two-party system is to give us policies like that. From a liberal Democrat environmentalist, he's pro-fracking. And I just imagine that solutions are not going to come from, compromised, corrupted, speciesist politicians, environmental groups, and the media. I shouldn't be saying these things about him now, because I feel like I'm going to have to try to contact his office this week, and that we vegans are probably going to have to go to Sacramento to spread the truth here. We'll have to talk to Governor Brown and Frank Gehrke, who is the head of the California Department of Water Resources. I mean, the deal is this. We are not going to have any water in California probably until we're submerged by the melted glaciers of climate change, you know? So then we'll have plenty of water, okay? So conserve until then, right now, okay? So we don't have any water. We'll have water when we're submerged by climate change, if we don't all go vegan. So from Sacramento, the release from Governor Brown says, following the lowest snowpack ever, the lowest snowpack ever recorded, and with no end to the drought in sight, Governor Edmund G. Brown Jr. today announced actions that will save water, increase enforcement to prevent wasteful water use, streamline the state's drought response, and invest in new technologies that will make California more drought resilient. Somehow I'm not feeling the solution here yet, but okay. Quoting, today we are standing on dry grass where there should be 5 feet of snow. This historic drought demands unprecedented action, said Governor Brown. Therefore, I'm issuing an executive order mandating substantial water reductions across the state. As Californians, we must pull together and save water in every way possible, end quote. Except going vegan, which is the only way to save water in massive quantities. Oh, I'm going to take the governor by his word. Even though he's a politician, I'll take him by his word. If he's saying we must pull together and save water in every way possible, and that by going vegan, it's the best way possible, then maybe. So he says, so his release says, For more than 2 years, the state's experts have been managing water resources to ensure that the state survives this drought and is better prepared for the next one. Last year, the governor proclaimed a drought state of emergency. The state has taken steps to make sure that water is available for human health and safety, growing food, fighting fires, and protecting fish and wildlife. Millions have been spent helping thousands of California families most impacted by the drought to pay their bills, put food on their tables, and have water to drink. The following is a summary of the executive order issued by the governor today. Save water. For the first time in state history, the governor has directed the State Water Resources Control Board to implement mandatory water reductions in cities and towns across California to reduce water usage by 25%. This savings amounts to approximately 1.5 million acre feet of water over the next 9 months, or nearly as much as is currently in Lake Oroville. Okay, so he's asking for a 25% reduction in usage, and that will save 1.5 million, let's see here, 1.5 million acre feet of water. Okay, so Lake Oroville is the, is one of the largest reservoir facilities in the state water project. The capacity of Lake Oroville is 3.5 million acre feet. Now, I know that, your governor is confusing us here by using acre feet, right? So what does that mean? So luckily, your host here is a graduate of Stuyvesant High School in New York City, a math and science high school. So I just remember back to the good old days when we used to laugh about acre feet and multiply them. So 1 acre foot equals about, or maybe equal, 325,900 gallons of water, okay? So an acre foot of water is 325,900 gallons. The capacity of Lake Oroville is 3.5 million acre feet. So, Lake Oroville is... Oroville, right? Oro, gold, oro, like water is more valuable than oro. So that lake is in the Sierra Nevada foothills east of the Sacramento Valley. And it's the second largest human-made lake in California. Well, an LA Times article last August under the headline, "California drought continues to take heavy toll on reservoirs," cites UC San Diego researchers. Estimates that California's three largest reservoirs, one of which is Lake Oroville, one of which is Trinity Lake, and one of which is Lake Shasta, all those three largest are at about 30% of capacity. Now, Governor Brown tells us that his 25% reduction plan would save about what is currently in the Lake Oroville Reservoir right now, which he says is about 1.5 million acre feet, which he wants to save over the next 9 months with a 25% reduction. So, well, according to the Stockholm International Water Institute, a vegan requires 10,000 gallons of water to grow his or her food in a year, compared to the consumer of animal flesh and secretions, you know, the meat, dairy, fish, and egg eater, who needs 320,000 gallons of water. So the same water needed to feed one meat, dairy, fish, and egg eater can feed 32 vegans. Can we afford this greedy luxury of consuming meat, dairy, fish, and eggs in California? So, if we do the math here, Stuyvesant High School math, let's see, subtract. So, each vegan saves about 310,000 gallons of water per year. which is the equivalent of about 1 acre foot. Each vegan saves about 1 acre foot of water per year. There are 39 million residents of California, about 40 million people in California. So if just 3 or 4% of Californians who really care, you know, who are really serious about water and saving the state, and you know, if just, you know, 3 or 4% were to go vegan immediately, that would equal or exceed Jerry Brown's 25% savings plan. Now, remember we said the capacity of Lake Oroville is 3.5 million acre feet. Trinity Lake is about 2.5 million acre feet. That's its capacity. Lake Shasta has a capacity of about 4.5 million acre feet. So, to save enough water for those three reservoirs to be full to capacity, we need 25% of all Californians, or about 10 million of us, to do the right thing and go vegan now. You know, so all we need, you know, we have 39 million meat and dairy eating Californians wasting 1 acre foot of water per year. We have the solution here. We can go vegan. Okay, we'll continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook, Bob Linden on Facebook, Bob Linden on Facebook. I just can't get enough of me. That's why. That's why there are multiple Bob Linden pages, and I just it's all about me, me. Yes, that's right. And by the power vested in me as a radio talk show host whose program has been broadcasting in California for 14 years now, I am now ordering mandatory veganism in the state. All citizens must now go vegan to save California from climate change and drought. And, hey, the governor had an executive order. His ideas haven't been that great. You know, I mean, he was one of his solutions in the past has been decline a glass of water when you eat at a restaurant. That's a real drought solution compared to what a vegan saves in a year. You'd need 4 million people visiting restaurants to match what a vegan saves in 1 year. A vegan saves 1 acre foot of water. We now learned a new measurement. It's not hard enough to try to learn the decimal system. And the governor's been talking about mandatory water restrictions, and you know, so the plants and the medians on the freeways won't get watered, and golf courses won't look as green, the lawns won't look as green. You have to take a shorter shower. And yet 39 million meat and dairy eating Californians waste 1 acre foot of water per year each. That means you. Are you that selfish? Really? No, you're not that selfish. You're not willing to destroy the state and have, you know, 39 million people going thirsty and hungry. Parched water. Each meat and dairy eater in California squanders over 300,000 gallons of water each year. Okay? So I say, fine them, right? Governor Brown wants to fine all the other violators of his new executive order. How about every person who eats meat, dairy, fish, and eggs in California? I say, fine them or imprison them. We have so many wonderful private prisons now that, you know, need occupants. How about people who eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs? Let's imprison them for, you know, destroying the state of California and making it unlivable. Or let's just force them all to go vegan. Mandatory veganism, right? And it's delicious. You're not going to suffer. You're not sacrificing anything or anyone. And, you know, you won't be such an environmental burden. You won't be such a financial burden, you know, associated with all your medical costs and all the heart disease and cancer and stroke and, you know, all of that. And but you notice in all of this, even on ABC News today and on that Pacifica show, Mocracy Now, everyone's blaming almonds and pistachios and broccoli for the drought. Well, you know, I try to take the 101 between LA and San Francisco these days so that I don't pass Harris Ranch in Central California. Harris Ranch processes 250,000 cows annually, and Harris Ranch brags that it provides, or it produces, 150 million pounds of beef per year. That's just that one place in Central California. Harris Ranch produces 150 million pounds of beef. The Stockholm International Water Institute tells us that the production of 1 pound of beef requires 8,500 gallons of water. Okay, all my Stuyvesant High School mathematician friends, get out your fingers and your calculators. Basically, that's 1,275,000,000 gallons of water for the beef just produced by Harris Ranch. 1,275,000,000 gallons of water. Shut down Harris Ranch to save California. Go vegan to save California. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can donate. Hey, click donate at goveganradio.com so we can get the word out. Greetings once again. Welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, we are live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. You can hear us on Stitcher. There's a phone number to call that I should know, but I don't, so I'll tell you next time I remember what it is, or you can listen on the phone. Just all over the place. We are everywhere you are, and we're glad you're listening. And we took some time off March 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Well, we really didn't take time off. We were having the World Vegan Summit and Expo at that time, and which was really an amazing event. Beyond all expectations, I might say, and gosh, I need to start posting pictures and videos. I think we're starting to post speakers from the event at the YouTube channel of Go Vegan Radio, and I thought we would reminisce with a couple of people who attended the event, and maybe, you know, in the weeks ahead, we'll have people who were there to talk about their experience at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Great attendance. Just the food was great. And the speakers were wonderful. And on the line right now, we have MJ, whom I met at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And Also, Suzanne Biro is on the line. And hi, MJ. How are you?
Hi. Good evening, Bob. And a big hello to Daisy as well.
Daisy is right on my lap here as we're doing the program. As you know, we're inseparable. So everywhere I was, Daisy was too. She's the star of the show. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So, what prompted you to attend the World Vegan Summit and Expo? How did you hear about it, and what prompted you to attend?
Yes. Okay. Well. My introduction to veganism really is just in its infant stage, not quite a year, but a vegetarian before that. So as I decided to immerse myself in everything vegan, and all the positive aspects of this new compassionate consciousness, I, did quite a bit of research online, read books and so on. And then as I did my research online, I came across your radio program, Bob. And, of course, I came across the ad for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. I then was, like, compelled to register and then, of course, attend. And now I find myself just hungry for more information. And I just have this amazing awareness, like, I have to get all... just fast track all this information. And now I'm looking forward to the next summit.
Great. I thought you were my friend. What do you mean? Wait, you're looking forward to the next summit. You want me to go through this all again? Is that what you want?
Absolutely. And I'll be a gopher for you too if you need that. And I'll happily volunteer for anything that you need. But you know what was amazing was that collective energy from everybody that was there, from all the like-minded individuals, and just the wealth of information that was shared from all the amazing speakers, and just like the humanitarian Philip Woolen and Dr. Will Tuttle, and, you know, it just goes on and on. And actually, I wanted to add with Philip Woolen, the day before I attended the summit, I was listening to that amazing debate, that speech that he gave against the meat industry. And I had my husband listen to it. And single-handedly, that speech alone had made my husband, who's been a chef for 50 years, professional chef, say, that's it. I'm going to go vegan 100%.
Wow. Holy cow, yeah. The ripple effect. We have a summit, there's an interest in the speakers, and your husband sees the YouTube talk, and all right, well, that makes it a success, and I think we had many people going vegan as a result of the summit, too. And but a chef for 50 years, and not a vegan chef, so and that's your background, too, as a chef?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's my background also. So actually, I know my mission in life now is to, stand for our cause, but I'm doing it through, I guess, to reach their hearts through their stomach. And hopefully I can show them that it is very possible to do this and make the transition, and you're not giving anything up. It's a win-win situation. It's for the animals, it's for the environment, it's for health, it's for climate change, everything. There's no negative aspects to this whole thing.
And it tastes so good. So that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, you're not going to sacrifice anything or anyone, because it's really... really amazing. The food we had at the Marriott was excellent. All of the vegan meals there, and should there be possibly maybe a new and improved World Vegan Summit 2.0, the sequel or whatever that might be. Sounds like you might be in the kitchen or helping with some of the food details on that.
Oh, so. Absolutely! It would be my pleasure.
Okay.
I mean, after cooking for 28 years professionally, there's nothing more that would be the highlight of my career, but to help send this message home that, you know, it's the only way to go. to be vegan.
And I run into a lot of people who are surprised at how great vegan food actually is. I mean, it's the most nutritious, and it is so delicious. Yes. I mean, what would some of your best or favorite dishes be that you prepare that are vegan?
Okay, let's see. I dabbled in a few. Well, I like to do all the different cuisines, but one in particular that always sells just to the carnivores, the omnivores. Any person that I've served this dish to, they're floored. And it's a creamy Alfredo fettuccine with smoked mushrooms. And they just can't get over the fact that there is no cream or butter and cheese. And that is actually the introduction, and it opens the whole dialogue to letting them know there's all these possibililities. And, you know, it's interesting because you could eat a plate of this, but you don't feel disgustingly heavy, and which used to be the problem in the past. Whenever I would eat an Alfredo, it was just too rich, and it was, you know, along with the guilt that went with it. So here again, it's just an amazing, it's soul food. It really touches your soul when you eat something that's prepared well, and you know that it hasn't suffered and it was pain free, and you know, your consciousness just it's you're awake when you consume, you know, something that hasn't lived or doesn't have a mother.
Right. Who hasn't been a tortured being? How can they be food? I think that it was Dr. Milton Mills who made the point at the summit that so-called animal products, their bodies, their flesh, their secretions, don't really taste that good until we add flavors from the vegetable world. You know, it's like when you think of it, it's like, you know, ketchup, there's from tomatoes and spices, and you know, so it really takes the vegetable kingdom to make the other taste better, you know. So
Definitely.
It's like the barbecue sauce, and you know, there's always so much sauce and gravy and everything so why not have it on tofu? So we also have Suzanne Biro on the line, and she too was an attendee at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, coming all the way from Canada. And how are you today, Suzanne? Oops, I'm not hearing. I'm not hearing Suzanne.
Uh-oh.
I'm hearing you, MJ, saying uh-oh, right? Okay.
That was me.
Okay. Maybe we lost her. Maybe John can get her back on the line. So, okay.
Okay.
So you are one who came to the event. So what do you think you took away from some of the speakers? Like what were some of the highlights or some of the speakers whom you enjoyed?
Oh, gosh. As I mentioned earlier, like Philip Woolen, an amazing humanitarian. And then there was Dr. Michael Clapper. Now, if all doctors could be like him, obviously, I mean, I was making a comment that if he's a true doctor. I mean, just he's not in it to push drugs or, you know, put the Band-Aid effect on it. And he actually wants to go to the source and treat the real issue. And many of these issues, these internal health issues, all, for the most part, are cause and effect from eating meat and dairy products.
Yeah, meat, dairy, and fish, and eggs. You know, it's almost like when we call somebody a carnivore, actually, I think that really they're an herbivore gone wrong or gone mad or gone wild or something, because really humans, and this is even according to Dr. Milton Mills, through his studies of physiology, Dr. Mills says that we are herbivores. We're not omnivores. We're not carnivores. And so somewhere in our minds, the propaganda has set in because T. Colin Campbell on the show said that 90%, at least 90% of all fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein and not much of it. So, well, it is time for a break. Hang on, MJ. We will continue.
Okay.
It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and you can support the program with a tax-deductible donation, support our work. We'll probably need a lot more money again if we're going to do a second summit, but let's think about that at least after the break.
I'll do a bake sale.
You'll do a bake sale. Great. Okay.
Yes.
Vegan cupcakes. Vegan cupcakes. I love it. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter, Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and the Bob Linden pages on Facebook. And thanks for support for the World Vegan Summit and Expo and this radio program to Nature's Flavors. Nature's Flavors had a table there. Nature's Flavors, Nature'sFlavors.com. Whether you are a professional chef like MJ or her husband, or you just look like one or act like one in the kitchen, check out the website of Nature's Flavors. For example, there are flavor concentrates which can be used in syrups and vegan ice cream and baked goods and various beverages and vegan yogurt. And it was very interesting at the World Vegan Summit and Expo when Ted Nordquist said that weekend he told us that whole soy was going out of business, and hopefully from the summit he's getting contacted by a lot of people, so that whole soy will come back into business, the best vegan yogurt on the market there. But I was talking about Nature's Flavors, and which also has flavor extracts, which can be also used in bakering and clear beverages, flavor oils, which are used in oil-based products such as chocolate oil, lip balm, flavor powders that can be used in smoothies and baked goods and dry mixes, available in sugar-free, flavor emulsions that can be used in making your own candy. So anyway, you can order from the website. It's naturesflavors.com. Thousands of items, 100% vegan. And we have Suzanne Biro on the line now. She was one of the wonderful attendees at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And I just wanted to check with you, Suzanne, and see how you enjoyed the Expo, what made you attend, and if it was of value to you, if indeed it was.
Sure. Well, first of all, it was of incredible value on a couple levels. I mean, I was, I've been 3.5 years vegan. I became vegan because I saw the documentary Earthlings about 3.5 years ago, and really was vegan overnight. But it took me a while to, change all my habits and learn. And so in my mind, I was vegan. I wasn't always able to live it perfectly. But I'm there now. And so the summit was just for me. I wanted to learn more. I've been studying as much as I can for the last 3.5 years. But I really just wanted to learn from people like you and Gary Francione, who have been doing this work for years and, really have a strong and clear stand on it. And I wanted to be around people who made sense to me. Because I found since going vegan, the world seems crazy. I go in a grocery store and there's dead body parts all over the place and no one seems to care. And that's been hard for me. And so to be in a place with people that make sense, who, you know, every single argument lines up and are telling the truth, you know, the truth about the damage to the environment, the truth about our health, the truth about what is actually occurring to the animals. And you know, what really stood out for me was Gary Francione's really clear stand. It's one of the main things I'm taking away is, you know, the single issue campaigns like Meatless Monday is actually doing so much damage. It needs to be no animal use. It's not about abuse. It's no animal use. They're not ours to use. So it was really a place for me to be around people who made sense to me. I feel like I found my place in the world again, and now I have a place to really study from. You know, continue to learn from people like you and this wonderful radio show, which I just discovered. So thank you. I will be listening to you often now, and then to really find a place that I can add my voice and add, you know, some of what I can do to this movement that's happening. And I think, you know, thanks to you and people like Philip Wolin, who I had a great opportunity to sit at the same table. Philip, you know, I had seen his speech, Animals Should Be Off the Menu, about a month ago before attending, you know, about a month before attending the summit. And then to sit beside him, and then he gave me about, 10, 15 minutes of his time to give me advice on, you know, how I can best use my skills and my energy towards this. And so it really was a phenomenal experience, and I know you single-handedly put that together or drove that, coordinating it. So I'm very grateful in looking towards how I can assist with the 2.0 version.
Okay. Well, I had a lot of good help from some really important people, Julie Meskel and also Michelle Tung and Ben Brayman and others. So thanks, MJ. Thanks, Suzanne, for being with us today. With Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, goveganradio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And every week at this time, we have animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. But just before the break, I hate to cut people off, especially when they're paying me a compliment. So Suzanne Biro is on the line, and MJ. Suzanne came to the World Vegan Summit and Expo from Vancouver, MJ from Temecula, and we were talking, Gary, before the break, how MJ and Suzanne valued from coming to the summit. And Suzanne was saying that you had an effect on her. Suzanne, what were you saying about the influence that Professor Francione had on you?
Yes, first of all, Gary, I did introduce myself to you briefly just the first day, and I'm just honored to even be on this radio show with the two of you. I read your book prior to coming, and the clarity of your stand, I think, is incredibly important. It helps me to become really clear, and I think your message of, you know, it's really important that we educate ourselves, I agree. It also gives me a path forward of what I need to do next, which is really, really useful, and to not cloud it with something like a Meatless Monday. And now I know exactly why, and I know the impact of that, you know, on the purchase of eggs, for example. So I really appreciate your clear, consistent stand. It's one I agree with, and I intend to do my part. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome, Susan. First of all, I do remember meeting you, and I think it's understandable when, you know, we have all of these large organizations out there, and you get a pretty consistent message from them. You get a consistent message from me. It's just the opposite. But you get a consistent message from them. They all say the same thing, which is basically to support some version or other of welfare reform and happy exploitation. So, you know, and they tell you that's what you got to do. If you want to really help animals now, you've got to, you know, you've got to do this, and that, you know, eventually we'll get to you know, to the abolitionist position, but that's down the road, and we're going to get there through using humane welfare reform and happy exploitation. That is exactly what new welfareism is. It's this idea that we can use means that aren't abolitionist to get to ends that are abolitionist, and that's just silly. And I think that, you know, not only does it not work as a matter of moral theory, it doesn't work as a matter of cold, hard practicality. It just doesn't work. And so I think that, you know, a lot of people who came to the summit, as I was saying last week when Anna and I were on Bob's show, I noted that there were a lot of folks there who I think, you know, came because they were interested in veganism, and they're committed to veganism, but they really hadn't thought through a lot of the rights welfare issues. And so I think it was an eye-opening experience for a lot of those people. And so I'm glad you learned something. I mean, look, that's the important thing, Susan, is that we've got to educate ourselves to educate others. And this, you know, we can't look at this this is not entertainment. I think a lot of people look at the movement as some form of entertainment. It's not. It's hard work. It's really, really hard work. And it's work, frankly, I would prefer not to do. But somebody's got to do it. We've got to do this. So, you know, and I'm glad that you're on board with this now. And I'm not.
And,
sure
and Suzanne and MJ are lobbying strongly for the new and improved World Vegan Summit, the sequel 2.0 next one. So.
Want to see Bob die early?
No.
Poor Bob. No. He was. I mean, you know, poor Bob. That was a lot of work, and it was a lot of coordination. And unlike all these large organizations that have staffs of people that, you know, that work on these things, and, you know, they rake in the money and they pay people and they have these careerist activists on staff who plan these things, Bob basically was doing this himself with some volunteers. And, you know, and so I'm sure it was Anna and I did a couple of conferences in the early 90s at Rutgers. I mean, really big things that went on all weekend long, much like the World Vegan Summit. And I have to tell you, they are horrible. They're a horrible amount of work to do. Horrible amount of work.
But worth it. So was that MJ? What?
You've got two more volunteers. We'd love to help you, Bob.
Right. And again, it's that obligation to do it. You know, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm back to, you know, zero money in the Go Vegan Radio bank account from this. But, you know, it's, you know, after you do something like that and people come to it and say, you know, it was an amazing event and, you know, they came from all over the world, you know, like I said, Latvia, Vietnam, you know, the Netherlands, and they felt it was worth it, you know, so I feel obligated to pursue it again, let's say, but who knows, you know?
Well, I'm sure we'll do something. We're, you know, look, this is the beginning of a whole series of things. As I said, we're going to drag Bob from California back to the East Coast. We'll even, like, take him to Brooklyn. You know, are you from Brooklyn or the Bronx?
I'm from Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens, but never really Brooklyn.
Okay, all right, we'll take you to Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens. and you can have sort of a, you know, you can walk down memory lane. And we'll do something at Rutgers, you know. We'll do something at Rutgers as well. And you know, we'll do something, I'm sure, in Northern California. But, you know, look, this is the beginning of a whole series of things that we're going to do over the coming years. You know, we've started something. We're not going to finish it. You know, we're not going to end it until it's finished, and it's not going to be finished in our lifetimes. So, you know, we're going to continue doing it because I think both Bob and I share in common the drive that, you know, you've got to do this. There's no other choice. There's no other choice, and there's nobody else to do it. So let's all do it together.
So we do it together, and I think right. Suzanne and MJ feel that too, and many of the people who were there. So, you know, let's keep it going. We're here to create a vegan world. I mean, it was a great gathering, and, you know, that's a start. And I think that, and we were talking about this earlier this week, that there's an energy to gathering in person, because some people were saying, well, why don't you do the next one on Skype or something like that? But I don't know. There's something about all of us being in a room together and ideas develop and friendships and networking that I think it's good for us to get together.
Yeah, I, I do too. I mean, I do a lot of speaking on Skype all over the world. I do conferences and talks all over the place, and they're good. They're fine. You know, they get, you know, they do. They have an effect. It's better than, you know, it's better than nothing. But I agree with Bob that the, you know, the part of what those events are about is camaraderie. It's the sort of the fellow feeling that you get with other people, and, you know, bonding and talking. And you know, although there were like lots of, you know, there were all of those excellent presentations, the formal presentations, much of that conference was going on in conversations in the hallways and, you know, all over that hotel. There were all sorts of conversations going on with various groups of people, and there was a lot of really good stuff going on. I mean, you know, I joined some of those discussions, and people were talking about some really interesting issues and from interesting perspectives. And so I think, you know, I think part of that is really getting together. So if there's any way we can do that, you know, we can also supplement, you know, we can also, as I said, there's no reason why we have to limit it to this idea of one conference or, you know, that this effort is illustrated only by those sorts of conferences. We can do other sorts of events, including but not limited to things on Skype. So it can be part of a series of things that we do to promote abolitionist veganism and the idea that veganism is the moral baseline if animals have any moral worth. And, you know, we all agree that they have moral worth, so let's promote veganism, you know? And so all of those events can be part of that sort of general approach.
Mm-hmm. And Suzanne was saying how since she went vegan, she has felt lost, that, you know, there's no truth around her. And so she came here and can relate again to people, or some people, right, Suzanne?
Well, the world's not a good place for truth, Susan.
just to be around people that make sense and will tell the truth without, you know, certain ties or limiting it or watering it down is really inspiring.
Well, and you're from Canada?
I'm just outside of Vancouver, BC.
Ah, very good, very good. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yes. I spoke at the University of Victoria a couple of years ago, and they had to force me to get on the plane and go home because I fell in love with Victoria. It was just a great place. It's a terrific.
It's beautiful, yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Okay. Well, so I guess I should thank Suzanne and MJ for joining us today, and maybe in the weeks ahead we'll have other people who attended the summit, and our new friends who want to plan the next one. So we'll all stay in touch.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, MJ. Thanks, Suzanne. So
bye.
Okay. So and how are you doing, Professor Francione?
Just peachy, Bob. Just peachy. I think we have really ignited something. I've been having some conversations with Tim Barford of VegFest UK, and he really wants to shift that organization in the vegan direction. He's been putting out a whole series of advertisements for the upcoming VegFest in London, and we've got to go vegan. And he was actually put them out for the Bristol one as well. We've got to go vegan. We've got to go vegan. Stay vegan.
Stay vegan. Yeah, that's
stay vegan. And so I'm going to be. He's asked me to be a keynote speaker at the October VegFest in London. I've agreed. Paul Shapiro is going to be there, and I certainly hope that Paul and I will have a chance to have a discussion in front of the group and involve them and get them involved and get their thoughts about whether we should be promoting veganism or whether we should be doing farmer outreach and passing out coupons for $1 off on Happy Bacon, as HSUS was doing not long ago. So
I have no idea why Paul Shapiro would be invited to an event that, you know, like, I guess somebody from the meat industry has to be there, I guess, right?
The reality is Paul's position is the dominant position amongst many animal advocates. So it's not that it's an outlying position. It's a completely it is the default position of the animal movement. So what you and I are trying to do is to change that. But change it we must, because the default position is that.
Oops, we have to take a break. And we'll continue with Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and thanks for support from SelectTea. That's SeelectTea.com, SelectTea.com, two E's in the middle there. And, well, SelectTea, the name tea says it all, although there's so many other products too, but there are 44 organic teas that you can choose, 77 medicinal teas, 14 flavored teas, just on and on it goes with 113 tea blends and formulas, and you can order all online. 61 medicinal herb teas, loose tea, the new premium loose burdock root tea there. I love cooking with burdock root. You can order online at selectt.com, SeelectTea.com. Almost tea time then in the UK, and great, Gary, to hear Tim Barford really kind of changing his tune in a happy way, right? So, Gary, you there? Hello? Hello, Gary. Oh, do you hear us, Gary?
Oops. While your call is being transferred to...
There's some, we lost him. I guess he will call us back momentarily, if not sooner. Okay, so, all right, Gary's going to the UK in October, and I guess he could take some select tea with him over there, right?
I'm back.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yes, I got cut off twice tonight, once during the break. But, you know... yes, it is great that Tim is moving in that direction. Bob, I wanted to say one thing before we leave tonight, and that is, it's my Easter message, and that is, you know, I posted two things this morning. I posted, it's Easter, celebrate life, go vegan, and I posted another one that said, if you celebrate Easter, think about what you're celebrating, the idea that love conquers everything, even death, so don't celebrate the triumph of love over death by participating in death. That makes no sense whatsoever. Celebrate love every day, go vegan. And I get the usual sort of spate of comments of, you've got to be atheist to be an abolitionist, and you've got to be atheist to be an abolitionist vegan, and that's just nonsense. You don't have to be atheist, you don't have to be theist. I don't really care whether people believe in God or don't believe in God, it's irrelevant. What's relevant is that you have moral concern about animals. And the idea that if you are a religious person, you can't have moral concern about animals is crazy, just as it's crazy to say an atheist can't have moral concern about animals. Moral concern can come from any source. It can come from religion or spirituality. It can come from poetry. It can come from just the relationship that you have with animals and the deep way that that affects you emotionally. The important point is you have to regard animals as being members of the moral community. You have to think, you have to care about morality, and you have to care about our moral obligations to animals. That's really what you need. Where you get it from, I don't care. But I really think this idea that, you know, religion's bad because religion has been bad for animals. That's true. But you know what? So has non-religion. I mean, you know, Stalin was not good for animals. You know, Mao wasn't good for animals. Pol Pot wasn't good for animals. And they were all atheists. So this idea that theism is what's bad and that's what harms animals. And this is a position that the new atheists take. They say, well, you know, the root of all evil is religion. No, the root of all evil is violence. And nobody's got a monopoly on that. Religious people and religious traditions don't have a monopoly on it, and neither do atheists. Everybody participates in that, and that's got to stop. if we want justice for all of the vulnerable beings in the world, human and non-human.
Well, thou shalt not kill.
Thou shalt not kill, indeed. But, you know, and thou shalt be vegan. That's the 11th commandment. It's not often talked about. That part of the Old Testament was dropped. It was edited out by the biblical meat industry. But the 11th commandment, thou shalt not consume flesh, eggs, dairy, anything. And
it still is in Genesis book 1 verse 29.
Veganism is right in Genesis 29 to 31. Genesis 1 29 to 31. Very clearly veganism.
Right.
Yes, we are moving in a vegan direction. VegFest is going vegan, and I'm glad Tim is shifting things in that direction. That festival is drawing a lot of young people.
Maybe I'll make my way out to it. We'll see. Maybe I can head out there. That would be fun. All right. We'll talk to you again next week, Professor Francione. Thanks for listening.
Thanks,
it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And archives at goveganradio.com. Thank you.